streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Saving lives? Selling access? Or both? What exactly is the Clinton Foundation doing? Political opponents say it was pay to play when she was Secretary of State, and they say it louder after an Associated Press article last week claimed more than half of the private citizens Clinton met with as Secretary of State were Foundation donors. Hillary Clinton calls it all smoke, no fire, but smoke doesn't help her presidential campaign. This hour on Point, we'll break down the ethics, politics, and good work surrounding the Clinton Foundation controversy. You can join us on air or online. Do you applaud the work of the Clinton Foundation? Do you see a conflict of interest? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us now from Washington is Rosalind Helderman, political investigations and enterprise reporter for The Washington Post. She's covered this story in depth, including a piece last week detailing the access Foundation donors got to the State Department. You can find a link to her reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Roz Helderman, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Roz, let me start by asking you to address someone who's been asleep for 25 years, just woke up, and would like to know what the Clinton Foundation, in simple terms, is all about. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, the Clinton Foundation has been basically the leading legacy project of Bill Clinton after leaving the White House. He founded it in 1997, originally to raise money for his presidential library. It continues to operate his presidential library and a center to study his presidency at the in Arkansas. But when he left the White House, it grew sort of in a very Bill Clinton way. Bill Clinton would have an idea, or he would meet someone, or he at one point had a heart attack, and it would give him an idea for a way to do good in the world. And he would go out and, using his Bill Clinton celebrity and the respect that people had for him all around the world, raised money to do all these different projects all around the globe.
Now, is the controversy that is flared in the presidential campaign now about what the foundation does or about what people who give to the foundation want?
Much more the latter. Certainly there are people on the right who claim that it does not do as much good as it says. But I think any fair analysis of the foundation would find that it has done a great deal of good and operates as a fairly efficient charity and does charitable work in the world. The issue becomes that one of the sort of features that was built into the foundation was that Bill Clinton was able to sort of wrangle global celebrities to kind of mix and mingle with businessmen and political leaders all around the world and convince them to give up their money for this charitable effort. And you know, on the one hand, that's a great thing. It's kind of a Robin Hood project. But on the other, it means that there is a lot of association with the most powerful, most connected, sometimes people who have some dark shades in other parts of their lives from all over the world. And they go to conferences together and they mix and mingle together. And you know, there's 200,000 people who have given money to the Clinton Foundation, including pretty much every – kind of big, powerful interests from all over the world.
Now, every ex-president mixes and mingles with powerful people. I assume that the only reason we care about this is that this particular ex-president happens to be married to somebody who at that time was a big player in the American government and may now head the American government.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. You can never forget that the Clintons are an extraordinarily unique couple in American history. I mean, we haven't had this before. We haven't had a former president who was married to a secretary of state who wanted herself to be president and everyone knew it. That's an unusual set of circumstances. It makes it different than, Colin Powell's foundation, for instance, which I've heard people talk about.
Well, so in some ways, looked at from a different angle, it's sort of a supercharged new issue put on the table by the rise of women in the workforce, in this case to the summit of American power.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. In some ways, if there wasn't the foundation, you would also be able to look back and see campaign donors, right? Bill Clinton had a lot of people who had donated to his campaigns. And what kind of relationship were those people going to have with Hillary Clinton and her State Department and a future Hillary Clinton presidency? It's just these worlds became very intertangled between the two of them.
All right. I want to set a little context for the current political discussion because, of course, Hillary Clinton's running against Donald Trump. Here's something that Donald Trump said last week on the campaign trail in New Hampshire about the connection between contributors to the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State.
These are people that want things for their donation. These are people that expect things for their donation. And when you follow it out and you see the people that left their office, you take a look at what those people, those companies, and those countries got. Believe me, you will find out it is plenty.
Roz Helderman, is that correct? Did they get plenty?
I don't think that we have seen thus far that they got plenty. What we have seen is that there was a world of kind of Clinton people, friends of the Clintons, past political supporters, and often those two camps also were foundation donors, who had a line in, a kind of back channel to the Secretary of State that ordinary people, you and me, would not have had. They had the ability to go to Doug Band, for instance, who was a close aide to Bill Clinton, and tell him that they were interested in having a meeting. They were going to be in Washington. They'd love to see the Secretary of State. And Doug Band was able to get an email right to Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's close aide. And sometimes those meetings came to happen. You know, we've also seen examples where they asked for something more specific than a meeting, help getting a visa, help in the case of the rock star Bono with getting a link up to the International Space Station during his concerts. And they didn't get those things. So we've seen cases where they got meetings. We've not seen sort of clear examples of people invoking their foundation donorship, contributions to then get something more substantive.
I'm looking at a list that the Associated Press distributed of some of the people who got meetings with Mrs. Clinton who had donated to the foundation. One is Joe Duffy, who had served in Bill Clinton's administration, longtime friend of the family. One was Haim Saban, who's an entertainment magnate, very wealthy man, huge Democratic donor. John Mack, head of a Wall Street firm. Randy Weingarten, head of the American Federation of Teachers. All these people are people who could have access to prominent Democrats, whether they gave to the Clinton Foundation or not, right?
Yeah, and I do think that the specific act of giving a donation to the foundation is sometimes overplayed. I think the broader picture you get is more of what you just described, of kind of the political network and the way that powerful political friends who are seen generally as supporters have access to our political leaders in the way that other people don't. And I think people would generally say, well, that's just the way that Washington works. And that might be true. But I'm not sure that in 2016, saying as a defense that there's nothing here worse than business as usual is exactly the political place you want to be.
Well, on the point that you just made, Rods, one of our listeners wrote on Facebook, Robert Arnold, said, How does this, quote, scandal differ from comparable access to any member of Congress granting to his or her donors? In those cases, the senator or representative is directly benefiting from the donation. Clinton Foundation donors donations are being used for charitable purposes, not the Clinton's direct benefit. Is Robert right?
I mean, I think that there's a lot that's comparable there. There's a few things that's going on here. First of all, the scale is different. The number of people who gave, the amounts they're giving. Also, the fact that this is a way to sort of establish yourself as a friend and supporter for people who live outside the country. As a reminder, it's illegal in this country for foreign citizens to give money to political campaigns. So there's that aspect. And also, frankly, we have the emails. Congress has exempted itself from the Freedom of Information Act, so we don't have the ability to get emails and see these kinds of conversations go on in congressional offices. I think I and many journalists would love to see those emails and don't particularly agree with that, with the way Congress has exempted themselves from that law. So you kind of get a window into the way that Washington works from these emails that you don't ordinarily see.
Let's hear from Hillary Clinton. We heard from Donald Trump a moment ago. This was a phone interview that Hillary Clinton gave to CNN over the weekend where she addressed the whole pay-for-play issue.
My work as Secretary of State was not influenced by any outside forces. I made policy decisions based on what I thought was right to keep Americans safe and to protect U.S. interests abroad. No wild political attack by Donald Trump is going to change that. And in fact, the State Department has said itself that there is no evidence of any kind of impropriety at all.
Roz Helderman, no evidence of impropriety at all. Is she accurate about that?
I mean, here's what we have not seen. We have not seen a clear example where a person invoked their foundation contribution. Don't forget, I gave $1 million. I need help with this issue, and then got it. But you know, these issues of access and coziness in politics are rarely that clear.
Let me ask you briefly to address the controversy over that AP article. Some people said that it was misleading in the subset of meetings that it used to define access. What do you think about that?
I mean, I didn't write that story and I didn't do that analysis.
Do you agree with the critics of the story?
I think their methodology made sense, and I think that the story explained what the methodology was so that readers could decide for themselves whether they thought it was a good analysis.
Roz Helderman is political investigations and enterprise reporter for The Washington Post. Roz, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the good work the Clinton Foundation does and the controversy surrounding its funding as Hillary Clinton campaigns for president. You can join the conversation. Can an ex-president raise money for charity if he's married to the current president? Should the Clintons remove their names and put the foundation in someone else's control? Joining me now from Washington is Tony Fratto, former deputy press secretary to President George W. Bush. He's now a partner at Hamilton Place Strategies and board member at the Center for Global Development, a nonprofit think tank. Tony Fratto, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
And joining me from Chicago is Daniel Borichoff, president and founder of Charity Watch, an independent watchdog group that monitors philanthropic organizations. He's also a former task force member at the Financial Accounting Standards Board, a private nonprofit organization that sets accounting standards for charities. Daniel Borichoff, welcome to On Point.
Yes, hello, John.
Tony, I want to start with you. Because you have worked both in the private sector and in government, you're associated with global development issues through that work. Give me your assessment as a Republican of whether or not there is a problem with what the foundation does, a problem with its financing, and a problem with ethics in government in terms of Hillary Clinton's service in the State Department.
Well, I think I would start it this way, John, is that, you know, the Clintons tried to do, and I think largely succeeded, a very valuable thing, which was to use their, you know, celebrity post the presidency of Bill Clinton to generate resources for international economic development and global health issues that that they took a very strong interest in. Unlike, they saw the work of people like Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation and others who had wealth that they could direct towards these efforts. They didn't have that kind of wealth, but they knew that they could generate that kind of wealth and direct it to these programs. And I think they largely succeeded in that. I mean, fairly familiar with a number of the programs of the Clinton Foundation. They do terrific work on HIV/AIDS and a number of other valuable areas. And that's the good part of it. The complications come in when then Senator Clinton becomes Secretary Clinton as Secretary of State, and where the fundraising for Clinton Foundation becomes to get at least the appearance of conflict with the work she's doing as Secretary of State. I have seen no evidence that there has actually been any anything nefarious done by the foundation or by Secretary Clinton in that job. But there's no question that the appearances are problematic and maybe even damage the credibility of her ability to do her job when she was Secretary of State.
Daniel, let me switch to the substance of the foundation itself. You know, when you evaluate charities, you look at, are they actually doing the work that they say they're doing? Are they putting the vast majority of their funds on the target that they're purporting to solve? Or are they paying big salaries to people who don't do all that much? Are they financing junkets and parties and that sort of thing? On those grounds, how do you evaluate the Clinton Foundation?
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say, John, is that at Charity Watch, we often get in the news for all the Fs and D grades that we give, and the Clinton Foundation actually is a top-rated charity. They receive an A grade, and they're able to get 88% of their budget to actual bona fide charitable programs, everything from HIV medication to, in Africa, giving people a 90% discount. So you've got childhood obesity in the U.S. They work on that. I mean, just they've got 11 different programmatic areas. They're also incredibly efficient fundraisers with only about a 2% cost to raise $100. So they are an outstanding humanitarian charity. And I think it's really, really important that we understand that some of these accusations, that they've become a political punching bag, the Clinton Foundation. And we don't want to hurt and beat up all charities because charities play such an important role in our country. So a lot of the things that have – a lot of the accusations could apply to other charities. You mentioned salaries. Salaries are reasonable. You got to pay – salaries are not bad. You got to pay people to run these programs. They have 2,000 people around the world. They've been criticized for only spending 6% or 15% on charity. Well, they're not a direct grant-making charity. That's a small part of what they do. They have people around the world that conduct programs that do the work. Also, in terms of donors, you've got every international charity, just about a large ones, is going to have international donors. That doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. Also, in order to get into some of these hot spots around the world, you're going to have to work with some tyrants and dictators to get in and help people that are dying. Simple as that.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Janelle on the line from Boston, Massachusetts. Janelle, welcome to the show, and what's your question?
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. My question is more around the standard that we're using when we talk about presidential candidates and the perception of the conflict of interest. And, the judiciary has this appearance of impropriety that actually, makes them, disqualify themselves from presiding over cases or, the standard for recusal here. And just think of what the president, herself or himself presides over every day and makes decisions each day. It's not the same standard that we should use where we have this perception of conflict, where we have a donation from many foreign countries, that violate human rights or LGBT rights or fund terrorism. We talk about direct policies, meetings, access. We've had that conversation, but is the standard we should be using not the potential of conflict of interest or the perception of conflict of interest and the appearance of impropriety?
That's a good question. Let me put that to Tony Fratto. Tony, as somebody who worked in the White House, when do you let the appearance issue drive a decision to not to do something, even if you think the thing that you would be doing is good?
I actually like the higher standard, and I think it's a really important point that the caller made. And to make one more distinction on it as well is that maybe two more distinctions. One is that when we're talking about the relationship with foreign governments, we do have a different standard for how we treat financial contributions from American citizens and American corporations than we have for foreign entities and foreign governments. And there are good reasons for that, because they complicate our relationships with overseas governments, and so we think about them differently. That's why in this case it's particularly we need to take a particularly closer look at it, because Secretary Clinton was Secretary of State. The other question, though, on this question of the appearance of impropriety, I think is also really important, because if there is the perception out there among stakeholders interested in U.S. policy, even if it's not true that you ought to, make a contribution to the Clinton Foundation in order to gain favor or access or, greater consideration of your policy goal from the U.S. government and the Secretary of State, that appearance is a problem, and it damages the credibility and the voice of the Secretary of State in being able to execute policies.
Tony, do you think, based on what you know and what you've learned, that it's plausible that in fact is what foreign donors thought?
I do believe that there were foreign donors who thought that that you would gain favor with the administration and with the Secretary of State if you made contributions to the Clinton Foundation. I don't think that's true, by the way. I think the evidence out there that I've seen from emails and schedules, I don't see any evidence that they did gain favor, and I haven't seen it in any policy changes or turnarounds on policy. So, but I do believe the perception was out there, and that makes it difficult for a U.S. official to do their jobs.
All right, let's take another call. We've got Roger on the line from Atlanta. Roger, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Thanks, John. My question is, is Hillary Clinton that smart that she's able to outwit everyone of everything that she's accused of? Or is this a witch hunt where they investigate everything she does to make it appear as if she's dishonest?
Daniel, let me ask you, from the perspective of someone looking at the foundation, does this look like a witch hunt to you, or do you agree with Tony that because of the perception problems, where the controversy is a legitimate controversy?
Well, I think that the Clintons' political opposition doesn't want to give them credit for the great works of the Clinton Foundation, so they come up with all of these false reasons for attacking it, when that's really unfair to attack the charity and the good works. And we shouldn't be discouraging our leaders to not be wanting to form really good charities. Certainly there shouldn't be conflicts of interest, and that should be avoided, as well as the appearances of that, as much as possible. But there could be controls and things that could be done to try to avoid that. But it does appear that they are being unfairly attacked, because many of the things that Clinton Foundations do, charities across the country are doing. Like they're getting attacked for, say, travel expenses. Well, they have programs around the world. They've got to have travel expenses. So I'm not sure that a lot of these, these attacks, are fair. And I think that's what happens, unfortunately, in politics. Even good charities get caught up in the mix of the political attacks.
I want to bring another voice into the conversation. It's Norm Eisen, former special counsel to President Obama for ethics and government reform. He's also a former U.S. ambassador to the Czech Republic and a fellow at the Brookings Institution. Norm Eisen, welcome to On Point.
Glad to be here.
Norm, I've got one question about a particular aide who is in the eye of the storm of this controversy, and that's Hillary Clinton's aide, Huma Abedin. She has figured in some of the emails that went back and forth with Clinton Foundation donors trying to get meetings with Hillary Clinton or something from the State Department. And one aspect of that is that during the beginning of her service, she was being paid simultaneously by the State Department, but also by a consulting firm that was set up by the Doug Band, who worked for the Clinton Foundation, which seemed to me fostered the entanglements that people are talking about now. Why was that arrangement permitted for her to be paid both by the U.S. government and a private consulting firm?
John, we do have a category of federal officials who we call SGEs, special government employees. And there are circumstances when the federal government requires the expertise of someone and that person has a relationship with an outside party. And if the relationship is reviewed and approved, it's permitted. My understanding was that this relationship received the appropriate scrutiny from the Department of State. So there is a permitted category for that type of service in the federal ethics rules.
Norm, let me resume with a question that pegs off of a statement that Hillary Clinton made last week, which was that this is all smoke and no fire. But if the goal of government ethics rules is to prevent the appearance of conflict of interest, isn't smoke the same thing as fire?
It's not, John. The government ethics rules serve a multiplicity of goals. Certainly, we want to avoid the appearances of conflict, but we also want to make sure that the government is able to function. And that outside entities can also continue to do the good things that we've heard, for example, the Clinton Foundation has done all these years. So in making ethics decisions, it's very much a balancing act. And all of the hard decisions, like the ones I was privileged to be involved in my time of serving President Obama in the White House, they always require this tough, hard-to-do calculus. In this case, I think the Clintons were attempting to square the secretary's service to the country with the ongoing human needs that the foundation serves, providing assistance to children, to moms, AIDS drugs, to those suffering. And so there was an effort to strike a balance. To me, what's extraordinary in all of the scrutiny, the tens of thousands of emails, the media attention, the NGO and watchdog attention that this matter has gotten, the government attention, including from the FBI, there's no indication of quid pro quos, of corruption. So I'm inclined to agree with the secretary's assessment. There's a lot of smoke that's been generated. I have yet to see a spark of fire.
Let's take another call. We've got Kay on the line from Madison, Wisconsin. Kay, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Senator Russ Feingold, who's running again here in Wisconsin for Senate, has suggested that the Clintons really need to think about shutting down the foundation if Hillary is elected so that they're not dogged by these ethical issues for her whole term. And Russ Feingold is really an ethical politician, and I respect his judgment.
Let me put that question to Dan Borichoff. Dan, what do you think?
Well, I think that you know, certainly to avoid some of these appearances of conflicts of interest, things need to be done. All these calls that it should be shut down immediately is really stupid. That means a lot of people are going to die. A lot of people are going to suffer. What needs to be done is programs need to be split off over time and coordinated with other governments or other partners, other NGOs, and this is something that could be worked upon so there would be less conflicts of interest. Nonprofits are very good at scaling up and scaling down, so this is something that could be done by the Clinton Foundation.
Tony Fratto, I want to thank you for joining us. I appreciate Tony Fratto, partner at Hamilton Strategies, former deputy White House press secretary to George W. Bush.
Thanks, John.
I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Org number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Daniel Borichoff of Charity Watch and Norm Eisen of the Brookings Institution about the Clinton Foundation and allegations that Hillary Clinton gave donors special treatment as Secretary of State. The Clintons say she didn't. You can join the conversation. How do you think the Clintons should handle the foundation now? What changes should they make? I want to play another piece of sound from Donald Trump in his assessment of the intersection between the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Secretary of State.
The corruption was revealed for all to see. The veil was pulled back on a vast criminal enterprise run out of the State Department by Hillary Clinton.
Norm Eisen, you know a little something about corruption and ethics in government. Evaluate Donald Trump's statement just now.
Mr. Trump's statement is nonsense. There's no veil that's been pulled back revealing any criminal conduct whatsoever. And in the typical definition of corruption, which is a quid pro quo, there's been no indication of quid pro quos in this extraordinary level of transparency that we have through the emails and the other records that have been revealed in the tens of thousands. Finally, hearing Mr. Trump reminds us that these assessments should not be made in a vacuum, that in looking as voters at the Clinton Foundation and at the Clintons' ethics, we also ought to evaluate the ethics of Mr. Trump, and those are woeful. He presents a far more thorny and challenging ethics profile as a prospective president than the Clintons do. So for all those reasons, I take strong exception to his words.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Joe on the line from Manchester, Massachusetts. Joe, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hello. Yeah, I'm calling with a couple of points here. I wish you'd have people who are a little more inquisitive, a little more critical of the Clintons. I think when Hillary was appointed as Secretary of State, Obama made a very bad mistake. Okay, she worked for 4 years around the world, and her husband was working the other side of the fence. When you get a $500,000 speaking fee from Russia, and then immediately after that, within a week, Hillary approves 20% ownership, Russian ownership of U.S. uranium mining, okay? When you have Haiti that's still not rebuilt after the Clintons were personally involved, okay, from the very beginning, they built and rebuilding Haiti. Why don't you go down there and take a look at it? Your commentators are all cheerleaders, it seems, for Clinton, okay? And I have no respect for a man who has a past record of being a sexual predator, okay, and being a proven liar on television to the American public, as well as Hillary has been a proven liar on television, okay? These people are totally despicable.
Okay, Joe, okay. I think we've got your point. I'm going to address point your question about critical scrutiny of the Clintons to Norm Eisen. Norm?
Well, I do think that it is important in a democracy to have critical scrutiny of all of the candidates. The Clintons and Mr. Trump, as well as the third-party candidates who are participating in the election. It seems to me that the most important place to focus our energies, given the lack of corruption, the lack of any criminality, the concerns that – legitimate concerns that voters have looking forward to the possibility of a Clinton or a Trump presidency. The place to focus the caller's energies are on the going forward issues, John. And that's the question of if either of these candidates is elected, what should be done to give the American people confidence that notwithstanding the relationships that every president brings to the Oval Office, that president will act in the public interest. I can tell you in the case of the Clintons that President Obama has built – I was privileged to help him do it – a state-of-the-art ethics and compliance operation in the White House, one that has resulted in what scholars tell us is the most scandal-free presidency in modern history. And Secretary Clinton, if elected, ought to continue that and even expand and improve upon it to assure voters that reasonable steps will be taken to make sure that the legitimate questions and concerns that they have are addressed if she is elected.
All right, let's take another call. We've got Catherine on the line from Charleston, South Carolina. Catherine, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Go right ahead.
Well, I think the what the gentleman just said a few moments ago, Joe, I believe, I second that. It's sad that these are the two choices that we have in such a wonderful country. But regarding to the foundation, what concerns me more is that nobody really dives into exactly what they do. They do great things. Well, what are those great things? And of what percentage of the money that's raised do they do with those great things? Who runs the foundation? What are they paid? What is travel spent for? It's sort of just skimmed over and you get a bird's eye view when I think people are asking for details. You know, if we had two squeaky, clean people that had not had any controversy before them or after them, then it would be easier maybe to just accept that. But that's not what we have.
Catherine, that's an interesting point, and I want to put that right to Daniel Borichoff. Daniel, Catherine says she wants details, not skimming over the surface. You know something about the details. What would you say to her?
Well, I would say there's for her to read the audited financial statements that will disclose to you all of the entities in which the Clinton Foundation controls. A lot of people just use the tax forms, which may just be one piece of the pie here. One thing you'll see is that 66% of the expenses actually go to the Clinton Health Access Initiative, which are some very substantial programs that have to do with the giving people needed medicines, working with maternal and child care. They have there's just lots of details. It's hard to get in on this radio program. I would encourage people to read, you know, the annual reports and the websites. I mean, you can see that they train people to be entrepreneurs, to get involved in business, to work on supply channels. They have peanut farming. They have they teach people how to farm. They teach people how to be better doctors. So there's just many issues that they're covering, the child obesity, the pain, people abusing the pain medication here domestically. They work on that. So there are a lot of details that are available. And I think the Clinton Foundation actually does a better job of describing what they're doing and accomplishing than most charities are able to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz. He's the chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He was on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday seeking answers about what we learned from Hillary Clinton's emails about cross relationships between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department.
If you look at the interaction between the foundation and those that worked at the State Department, at one point they said, our boss. You know, there's supposed to be a bright, clear line. And I think one of the questions the media needs to ask Hillary Clinton was her interaction and her senior staff, was their interaction with the foundation, was that official business? Because they say that sometimes it was. Or was that just a private something?
Norm Eisen, would you agree that there was not a bright, clear line?
I think that the line was clear, it seems to me. You have a number of emails. In fact, in flipping through them this morning, it seemed to me the majority of times where folks in Secretary Clinton's office declined the requests. So I think there was an understanding of the respective roles. Now, that being said, you know, if anybody received this kind of an audit with tens of thousands of emails, calendars, official schedules, miles and miles of newsprint and media review. Are there going to be times when there are stumbles, when the line was blurred? Yes. That's why it's important to look at the whole picture in context. And I think when you do, there's no evidence of corruption, no evidence of quid pro quos, certainly no evidence of the kind of wild allegations that some of the political adversaries have been making. So I think the line was maintained in an appropriate, not perfect, but basically in an appropriate way.
Now, whether or not there was proof of corruption, the Clintons have acknowledged that they can't keep functioning the way they have if she's becoming if she is elected president. Now, Bill Clinton was at a campaign stop in Atlanta last week. He talked about this and talked about the changes that would be made.
If she becomes president, we'll have to do more than we did when she was Secretary of State, because if you make a mistake, there's always appeal to the White House if you're Secretary of State. If you're president, you can't. But we're going to transition all these responsibilities that would require foreign or corporate donations, which I won't accept, and I won't raise money for the foundation if she wins.
Now, Dan Borchoff, I talked yesterday to Joel Fleischman of Duke University, who's an expert in foundations, and he said that saying you won't accept foreign or corporate donations is not enough, that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, the Clinton Foundation cannot, in a way that meets appearance standards and ethical standards, can't raise money at all. Do you agree with that?
I think that's going too far. One thing you have to understand is one of the beauties of the nonprofit format is that you have an independent board of directors. So the Clintons don't control the Clinton Foundation. It's a public charity. It's not a private foundation. So what they need to do is get independent people involved in running it that can show that they have independence of the Clintons. Of course, it can get tricky because the Clinton Foundation has programs that offer contraceptive care to people. And so certainly somebody who's an ultra-conservative may not like that particular program. But there are many open-minded people on both sides of the political spectrum that have a distance from the Clinton Foundation that could serve in a governing role.
Let's go back to the phones. Debbie is on the line from Austin, Texas. Debbie, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I would just like to say that I am a Democrat, and I believe that the Clintons are doing the right thing with their foundation. However, if this foundation was in the hands of, let's say, Donald Trump or another Republican, I would be very suspicious of people donating and not expecting favors.
Debbie, I'll put that to Norm Eisen. Norm, do you think that is in fact understandable, and is that a reason that the foundation should either be shut down or completely given over to people who are not connected to the Clinton family or not members of the Clinton family?
I think the concern is understandable. That's why the rules and limits were put in place around the Clinton Foundation at the time that Secretary Clinton entered the administration. And that's why we need to have a tough set of additional rules and limits in place should she become president. I think it's the right thing for President Clinton to step off the board, not to fundraise, for the foundation not to take the foreign money, all of which has already been laid out there. And echoing Daniel's point about independence, there also needs to be an independent and tough ethics program that's put in the White House, where should she be elected, President Clinton agrees to a set of steps, for example, not discussing foundation business, not taking calls from identified folks who serve on the foundation board, having a set of screening mechanisms in place. We regularly do those in government. We know how to set up those ethics and compliance programs. We had a good one, and which continues to succeed in the Obama White House, including a ethics pledge that every nominee, appointee, those who are confirmed by the Senate sign, transparency rules about who comes and goes to the White House, visitor records put on the internet, and the like. I think that Secretary Clinton, if elected, should continue and even expand the existing system, make it even better based on lessons learned, including to address the legitimate questions that your caller and voters have.
I would like to add that that the Clintons giving up the corporate support, it's probably going to be really hard to get corporate money. Now that the Clinton Foundation has gotten enmeshed in this big political controversy, because corporations need to be very conservative and want to avoid controversy, kind of like a celebrity that gets involved in some scandal, that then the companies pull back the sponsorships. The same thing would probably happen with the Clinton Foundation. So them giving up the Clinton giving up the corporate donations probably would be hard for them to get anyway at this point.
Although the foreign donations would not be hard to get.
Yes, so they are giving that.
Right.
They are giving that up, which will help avoid the appearances of conflicts.
Daniel Borichoff, president and founder of Charity Watch, thank you so much for your time today.
Sure, my pleasure.
And Norm Eisen, former special counsel to President Obama for ethics and government reform, thank you too.
Thanks, John.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the University of Chicago is the latest school to push back against trigger warnings and safe spaces. We'll look at the debate over political correctness on campus. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.